physically we would be able to dismantle the overwhelming bulk of their programs within a year.
Optimism amid reports of North Korea boosting its nuclear program. It's Monday, July 2nd. This is VOA Asia. Hello and welcome. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're also on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, racing against time in the search for Thai teens. Human trafficking remains a big problem in Asia. Australia deals with forced labor. Sharks on display. Animals predict the World Cup. It's all on today's VOA Asia. U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton said Sunday he believes that most of North Korea's nuclear, chemical, and biological weapons programs can be dismantled within a year. Bolton told CBS News that if Pyongyang has already made the strategic decision to end its weapons development program and they're cooperative, meaning significant progress could be made over the next 12 months.
What our experts have devised is a program that, with North Korean cooperation, with full disclosure of all of their chemical and biological nuclear programs, ballistic missile sites.
That hasn't happened yet?
We can. It has not. We can get, physically, we would be able to dismantle the overwhelming bulk of their programs within a year.
But Bolton declined to comment on a Washington Post report that North Korea is trying to obscure and hide its nuclear program, even after North Korean leader Kim Jong-un agreed at last month's Singapore summit with U.S. President Donald Trump to work toward denuclearization. VOA Asia's Ira Melman spoke via Skype with David Albright, a former U.N. weapons inspector and now president of the Institute for Science and International Security. He did comment on the Washington Post report.
They're working on various facilities. Now, I would say these aren't critical facilities. I mean, they're mostly doing what we would call kind of secondary or auxiliary buildings to the main nuclear facilities. So there hasn't been anything significantly changed about the kind of nuclear potential of Yongbyon in quite a while. And so I think the media overblew the 38 North report. I mean, the 38 North report was essentially trying to give an update on what's going on at the site. And as we've done maybe last month or month and a half ago, and the media thought it was some big development of that somehow disproves Trump. And it really has almost no relationship to President Trump's statement. As an outsider, I can say this. I mean, I'm not hostile to the administration or in any way, but I think Trump tends to wildly exaggerate and speak spontaneously. But I think within the administration, they're well aware that the summit didn't mark the end of North Korea's nuclear progress on building its nuclear arsenal. And in fact, the point of the negotiations that are ongoing after the summit is to indeed create an agreement where not only is that progress stopped, but reversed, and you get denuclearization. Now, another part of this is that people often just think that what they can see in these commercial satellite images is all the nuclear program there is. And in fact, I know we published in late May, it was covered in the Post, that North Korea likely has another uranium enrichment plant that can make nuclear explosive material, in this case, weapon-grade uranium for nuclear weapons. North Korea has always denied having it, took a lot of work in the intelligence community to find it, and the name we learned about was called Kang Song.
This seems to be a repeat of what has happened in previous generations of North Korean leadership, does it not?
No, not at all. I mean, North Korea hasn't agreed to anything yet. And the nuclear facilities are, in negotiating terms, very valuable. And North Korea is going to want something for shutting those down and then dismantling them. This is a negotiation. Why would North Korea stop the activities at Yongbyon and these secondary or these auxiliary buildings were planned long ago? Why would they stop the construction and look like they're making a unilateral concession? And I think it's going to take some time. Now, Secretary of State Pompeo has made it clear that he's going to, you know, from his point of view, and I think President Trump supports this, is they're going to let it run probably through the elections and see if North Korea is willing to make that decision to denuclearize. And if they're not, then, you know, I hate to say this, we're going to probably end up back in a maximal pressure campaign against North Korea. And all the allies of the United States have agreed that that's the case. China obviously is more ambivalent about it, but technically it's also agreed. North Korea has to make commitments to denuclearize, or else this isn't going to work. So I think if Kim Jong-un is willing to denuclearize, it's going to be a big shift in North Korean behavior. And President Trump and his people understand what it needs to be, and we'll have to make a judgment whether what North Korea offers is enough or whether it is going to be a repeat of the past, that they would give away a little bit and then cheat on the side, and then after a couple of years the whole thing would fall apart and North Korea would kind of spurt out the other end with many more nuclear weapons. And I think the view of the administration is we're not going to let that happen again. That if it does happen again, North Korea will be a major nuclear power with tens of nuclear weapons, approaching 100 nuclear weapons on intercontinental ballistic missiles and other missile delivery systems. And then what are countries like Japan and South Korea going to do? I mean, they'll probably go nuclear at some point. And so you're going to have if we don't stop it now, and that may mean another round of very tough sanctions. We're going to end up with a region that will have a high chance of having a nuclear war. But it is a historic opportunity, and I think we should take it, and we should give the administration a little bit of a break to try to cobble this whole thing together.
David Albright, a former UN weapons inspector and now president of the Institute for Science and International Security. He was speaking via Skype with VOA Asia's Ira Melman. In an interview Sunday, President Trump told Fox News that he had a very good chemistry with Kim at the summit and believes that Kim will carry out his announced intention to end his nuclear weapons development. These are among some of the top Asia stories currently trending on VOAnews.com. The United States says North Korea could dismantle nuclear program within a year. Rescuers clear hurdle in cave search for missing Thai boys. Senior U.S. diplomat for Asia to retire. China reportedly lends $1 billion to Pakistan. 18 killed and 14 hurt in collision on China highway. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also, stop by our VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. As Thai rescuers continue their search for 12 boys and their soccer coach who disappeared in a flooded cave complex 6 days ago, international help and public support has grown. Steve Sanford has this update from the search site.
Ongoing mountain runoffs from the daily rains in the caverns of Tam Luang Cave have hampered rescue efforts. The U.S. Pacific Command has arrived to help, exploring all possible options for the quickest extraction of those trapped.
The rain is unpredictable, but then you also have the human element, 24-hour operations. It's amazing to see, you know, the Thai authorities coming together and all the volunteers here supporting the rescue operation.
The relief area has grown with each day as volunteers cook meals and offer supplies to the growing crowds.
I want to give energy and support for the rescue teams that are going inside the caves since I can't go in and help them myself.
But the urgency of draining the water using high-voltage pumps has brought with it injuries for some of the inexperienced workers. It's a stressful time for all coming to grasp with the crisis, including local teacher Turtu Pompanya, who taught six of the students.
At school, we're letting the students meditate and pray and giving each other support for the missing students.
As the nation digs in to help, the hope for a successful rescue remains in the hearts of the people. Steve Sanford for VOA News in Chiang Rai, Thailand.
A team led by Thai Navy SEAL divers pushed through the murk of a kilometer-long chamber to a passageway that could lead to where the missing boys possibly took shelter, but officials say they're not yet in the location where they want to be. Meanwhile, Mount Agung in the Indonesian island of Bali has erupted again. Plumes of ash forced the closure of the international airport on the Indonesian resort island, as we hear more from Reuters' Grace Lee.
A thick plume of ash and smoke covered Bali's skies as Mount Agung volcano burst to life for the first time in months. And once again, a familiar scene at the Indonesian airport.
I was very upset when I got to the airport and it was closed. We're stuck sitting on the ground for 24 hours.
Travelers found themselves stranded after the airport canceled flights out of the island, meaning 48 flights have been called off, affecting over 8,000 passengers.
Don't have any more accommodation, and we're just stuck here, really. I am a bit angry, and our next plan is to sit here until the flights open up.
A little annoyed that they've cancelled every flight, but there's nothing much you can do about it. I'm probably going to extend my stay on Bali because I'm just travelling.
The eruption sent an ash column of 2,500 meters into the air, and authorities are monitoring conditions, though the alert level on the volcano hasn't been raised so far. Mount Agung has been erupting with various intensities since late last year. In December, the airport was closed for a period, and thousands closer to the volcano were evacuated.
Happening now in Asia, more than a dozen African countries have been weighing the merits of adding the Chinese yuan to their mix of foreign reserves, discussing the idea at a gathering of officials last month in Harare, Zimbabwe. Adopting the yuan would make it easier for African countries to pay back loans to China. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you're starting your week with us here on VOA Asia. The U.S. State Department says Myanmar has joined the ranks of China, North Korea, and others as the worst offenders in the world for human trafficking and forced labor. But the State Department also recognized 10 heroes who have dedicated their lives to ending the scourge of modern slavery. VOA's diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain has more from Washington.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo was joined by presidential adviser Ivanka Trump to release the State Department's annual Trafficking in Persons report. He had bad news to relay on Myanmar, formerly known as Burma.
In Southeast Asia, Burma's armed forces and others in the Rakhine State dislocated hundreds of thousands of Rohingya and members of other ethnic groups, many of whom were exploited through the region as a result. Some in the Burmese military also recruited child soldiers and subjected adults and children from ethnic minority groups to forced labor.
Pompeo also singled out Libya, North Korea, and Iran as among the worst offenders, saying Iran punished victims of trafficking instead of the perpetrators.
Francisca Awam Mbuli.
But the ceremony also honored 10 heroes dedicated to ending human trafficking, who have often put their own lives at risk. Awa Mbuli from Cameroon experienced modern slavery herself.
When I arrived at the Gulf Cooperation Council, there wasn't a job teaching English. I was trafficked into slavery as a domestic worker, where I didn't earn anything but inhuman treatment and sexual abuses. When I said that I wanted to go home, they told me that I had a debt of $3,000, which I had to pay, and then pay my flight back home. This was a lie.
She now leads programs to economically empower women who are survivors of human trafficking in Cameroon. Another Hero Award winner said everyone can do their part to fight human trafficking by being a conscientious consumer.
In many cases, I found that the companies has been complicit in human trafficking in their supply chain. So we can put pressure on the company by saying that I do not want to buy the tainted product.
Kim Yong-chul has exposed forced labor conditions in South Korea and globally, particularly of migrant fishermen. Cindy Sain, VOA News, Washington.
Coming up, forced labor also reaches to Australia, where there are plans to fight it. You're listening to VOA Asia. The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English. This news from VOA Asia. Malaysia's former ruling party picked former Deputy Premier Ahmad Zahid Hamidi as its new leader Saturday as the party members grapple with a spectacular defeat in May's general election that pushed them from power after more than 60 years. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories and great features. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, Australia has introduced new laws to Parliament in a bid to become a world leader in fighting slavery. Phil Mercer in Sydney has learned that more than 3,000 Australian companies will be forced to report what they're doing to avoid slavery in their supply chains.
The government says the proposed laws are a milestone in Australia's fight against a heinous crime. It's estimated there are 4,000 people in slavery-like conditions in Australian farms, mines, building sites, brothels and homes. Many have been trafficked from Asia, particularly South Korea, Malaysia and Thailand. Victims of modern slavery can be bullied into prostitution through coercion or threats to family members back home, or forced to work for low wages on construction sites or in factories. Slavery can include also the theft of wages. Under the legislation, a modern slavery business engagement unit will be set up to monitor the new regulations. Alex Hawke, Australia's Assistant Minister for Home Affairs, says the law will make a difference.
For the first time, large businesses will be required to identify how their operations and supply chains may contribute to modern slavery and explain what they are doing to address these risks. This bill will send a clear message that modern slavery is unacceptable in the supply chains of all of our goods and services.
Campaigners believe the Australian legislation is an important step, but say there should be penalties for companies that fail to comply and don't do enough to eradicate slavery. Karen Adams is the Director of Advocacy at the Human Rights Law Centre.
A mandatory reporting scheme is not really mandatory if there are no consequences for companies that fail to comply. So without financial penalties and with no independent commissioner to help enforce them, we think the new laws will lack the necessary teeth to make sure that the worst offenders lift their game. We think the government needs to urgently address the weaknesses in the bill and send a strong message to brands that profiting from abuse won't be tolerated.
The anti-slavery law is expected to be approved by Australia's Parliament. If so, it will be reviewed in 3 years to see if it's working. The results of a 3-year investigation by Australia's workplace watchdog found foreign workers and backpackers on farms are being treated like slaves. The United Nations has estimated that 25 million people are exploited in international supply chains, including in the agriculture, construction and manufacturing industries. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
This news from VOA Asia. A senior U.S. diplomat for Asian affairs is leaving the State Department at the end of July amid ongoing and critical negotiations with North Korea, weeks after the leaders of the United States and North Korea met in Singapore. This big story and much more are on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, sharks are the stars of a splashy new exhibit at the New York Aquarium. VOA's Faith Lapidus explains the new exhibit is a major step in the beachfront facility's recovery from the devastating impact of 2012's Superstorm Sandy.
Aquariums can make us feel like we're under the sea. but superstorms can actually put aquariums underwater. That's what happened when Hurricane Sandy devastated the New York Aquarium in 2012. 6 years later, the aquarium's waterscapes are finally back where they belong. Its first exhibit in its new building is called Ocean Wonders, Sharks.
So opening this exhibit, Ocean Wonders, Sharks, is a great step towards expanding our footprint, expanding the experience, and delivering on what people hope to find when they come to the New York Aquarium.
They come to a new building whose shape evokes a school of fish. Inside are the real fish, with 12 species of sharks and 6 species of skates and rays. A clear walkway takes visitors through a recreation of an Indo-Pacific coral reef.
It's the beautiful reef that you might see if you were diving off of Australia or Fiji or any of these places. The truth is, if you love coral reefs, you should care very much about sharks, because as apex predators in these systems, sharks are important to the health and the diversity of coral reefs.
Not far away, work continues to restore the rest of the exhibit space destroyed by Hurricane Sandy. It's expected to open in the next year and a half. Until then, there are sharks. I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
Have you been one of the millions of football fans following the crazy and dramatic play at this year's World Cup? Well, when it comes to predicting the winners in World Cup matches, VOA's Sadie Witkowski tells us the carnivores are out for blood.
Lions and tigers and bears, oh my! These meerkats have probably never played a game of soccer or watched the FIFA Men's World Cup, but they certainly are keeping an eye on it. In fact, creatures large and small are being used to predict the outcome of World Cup matches. The most common method is to offer the soothsaying animal 2 containers of food, each marked with the flag of the competing countries. Usually, the first box chosen by the animal is interpreted as the predicted winner. But the animal oracles vary from the cute to the unusual to the place of origin.
Гадалка у нас выступает и предсказательницей тапир.
The fortune teller that performs today is a tapir. Because her homeland is Brazil in South America, this animal got the privilege to decide. Today she predicted that Sweden will win the match.
And lo and behold, she was right. But before you employ your pet to pick the next World Cup winner, keep in mind they're usually only as good as a coin toss, choosing correctly only half the time. Zella the elephant at the Stuttgart Zoo predicted a tie between Germany and Mexico. And Spartak the lemur chose the losing team, as did Timon the meerkat. Zoos are happy to get in on the action, even if their animals don't always quite get it right.
I think we just misinterpreted that. If I remember correctly, she went first to the German box, but then to the Mexico box, and she opened it and ate the food. So that was just a mistaken interpretation.
Missed interpretation or not, this year the carnivores seem to be out-predicting the herbivores. Achilles, the congenitally deaf cat, has made at least 4 accurate predictions for the group stages of the FIFA Cup. Achilles lives in the Hermitage Museum in St. Petersburg, where some believe he may actually have psychic abilities.
We are sure that he has a special gift because he is deaf. And we think if he has not something, so he received anything more. And this is his gift.
But the tide may be turning against the carnivores. This Russian Bengal tiger picked Russia to win its match Monday against Uruguay, a match the Russians lost, 3-0. For a hometown fan like this tiger, probably just a case of wishful thinking. Sadie Witkowski, VOA News.
Well, we always count you as a winner for joining us each and every day. You've been listening to VOA Asia. You'll find our program on iTunes and SoundCloud. You'll also find us streaming on our website, voanews.com, and, of course, our VOA Asia Facebook page. Facebook's a great way to hear our program, especially if you happen to be in Myanmar. Our VOA Burmese Facebook page also carries the program, and we thank everyone in Myanmar who is listening to our program today. We also thank our director, Tracy Carter, engineer, Zainab Abdel-Rahman, our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, and Doug Bernard. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day.